Good morning and welcome to the December edition of KPCW's Fabulous Film Panel. And, you know, since we're leading into Sundance, I thought we had to, you know, give our film panel a proper introduction. You got to picture them here like, you know, Reservoir Dogs, like they're just slow and cool. Just picture them just walking into the room here like Tarantino. So. And we have in let's go in reverse alphabetical order for a change, which we have the fabulous Jill Orschel.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Yes, we have the erudite Linda Jader.
Good morning.
Good morning, and Martha Mann Harrington.
Good morning, Rick.
Okay. Well, it is that time of year again, but we'll forget about Christmas just for a second, but get into the Sundance Festival 2019 Sundance, and they've put out the program. So we have the three of you are, of course, eager to see what the festival is going to turn up. So Linda, tell us what's interesting to you in the program, or you know what are there kind of some usual programs that you go for?
Well, I go straight to the docks. That's my favorite at Sundance, and just looking at the lineup, I'm really excited to see Knock Down the House. It's really going to focus on Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the woman who won the congressional seat in New York, and a few other kind of up-and-comers, a woman from West Virginia, another woman from Nevada, another woman from Missouri. So I remember in Michael Moore's Fahrenheit 11/9, that's the first time I had seen Alexandria, so it's going to be exciting to see that, especially after the elections. And then where's my Roy Cohn? He just fascinates me, Roy Cohn. And I think it'd be very timely. And I just have always wanted to learn more about him. You know, obviously the connection with Donald Trump, but through Angels in America. And just, it's really, he's an interesting character. So that looked good to me. The feature on Ted Bundy. I'm looking up for the title again. I guess Zac Efron's going to be playing Ted Bundy. So that should be an interesting film.
A strange title.
Yeah, I have it right here.
It almost sounds like it wants to be a comedy or something.
Yeah.
Extremely wicked, incredibly vile.
Exactly. Extremely wicked, shockingly evil, and vile. Late Night looks great with Mindy Kaling and I think Emma Thompson. Sounds like she'll be a lead in there. I see John Lithgow showing up in a lot of films this year. It'd be nice to see him, too. He's in that one. let's see what else. Marianne and Leonard, about Leonard Cohen and his wife, and their story is going to be great. There's also a doc on Miles Davis. I had seen Miles Ahead several years back, so it'd be nice to compare the two films there. And then, you know, it's going to be controversial, but Untouchable, the story about Harvey Weinstein. Mm. So it'll be interesting to have that screened here.
Jill, what's on your menu?
You know, one of the things that I noticed this year that I was really interested in, because the Sundance Institute has lost our beloved director of programming, Trevor Groth, and has been replaced by Kim Hutani. And just interesting to see what she will do with the programming. And it seems there's like rumors that it's going to be more international. The world cinema, us here in Park City really know how to can appreciate world cinema, but they kind of have their own category. So it seems like the world cinema is more integrated into the programming. And so I think that's really great because I think it's significant because, boy, the world cinema is often so excellent. It just raises the bar for everybody, you know, to have it integrated. Also, I think it's really significant because, you know, there's countries all over that fund the arts. And our country, which is so wealthy, is where the arts and film is so threatened. And I think Sundance is really going to give a platform for that to, you know, put a more of a focus on, you know, helping out filmmakers and arts. And so I'm really excited about that. And 33 countries are represented this year. And I think that's more than any. I think for the films that I saw, I looked at the Farewell made in China, and the actress Awkwafina. Oh, I saw her in Crazy Rich Asians and just fell in love with her.
She's awesome.
Yeah, so I really am excited to see the Farewell.
I think she has two or three pictures in the program.
Oh, the, man, one, she's one a dynamo.
Kings and Queens of Sundance.
Yeah, exactly. And for the two documentaries in the U.S. program, U.S. documentary program, Moonlight Sonata, Deafness in Three Movements, by the director Irene Taylor Brodsky. She's back from, she made a film about her grandparents, or maybe her parents, that were deaf. And this one is also an expansion of that same theme. So it's neat to see her back. And I'm really excited for the David Crosby Remember My Name documentary. He's just such an interesting character. And, you know, it's going to be really fun to see him from the inside out.
The in terms of the what changes you might see about the international program, I mean, looking at what they've put out, it looks like about the same treatment. I mean, it's been a long time that the international competition has been an equal to the U.S. independent, and you know you get to vote on that one and such. What kind of changes do you think Yutani might bring to him?
Well, I'm just noticing just the language that's being used, just like subtle little things. You know, just browsing the website last night, just. Just more events, more panels, more exposure rather than an integration, as opposed to that that they're in their own separate section. Mm. So I think it's more subtle.
And particularly because I think you've seen such a focus on domestic politics in the past couple years, appropriately, and as you do again in the U.S. doc segment, but I think you do see a bit of a return of a lot more, because they do walk the talk in terms of diversity, and I'll get into that in my segment, but in terms of both a refocus, you've seen a bit of a resurgence in a lot of the Middle Eastern storytelling and stories from the East, China, and so forth, and I think you will see those kind of uplift a little.
Mm-hmm. And Mark, aside from that, what?
Well,
what
I knew that Linda was going to focus on the film she focused on. So I did take a harder look at the dramatic category, because that's always of interest to me. And I do think Sundance has risen the ranks of a lot of different stories there, and I think that's reflected. And so in dramatic, Clemency with Alfre Woodard is really, I think, going to be of interest. I think I'm not sure how it's pronounced. It's L-U-C-E, if it's Lucy or Lucci. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming Lucci, with Tim Roth, Octavia Spencer, Naomi Watts. A family story based on sort of misperceptions and expectations from an international adoption. And The Sound of Silence, Peter Sarsgaard, always good, safe bet. With Rashida Jones, so
we can find out what's a house tuner.
Yeah, that's the premise of that film, right? Is really interesting. So it's sort of feng shui of sound, or
and so and because I knew the political focus, you know, might make itself evident, in as it did in the other recommendations. I went opposite for international documentaries. Honeyland. How can you not go to a film about honey? I mean, come on. So you need a chill moment when you're sick of the left politics of Sundance. You know, go to a documentary about honey.
And there's Honey Boy, too. And,
That's right.
Oh, yeah.
That looked great.
Yeah.
And The Sea of Shadows is interesting to me, just because we've had some of those environmental crossover espionage terrorist kind of films that have done so well and been intriguing. And this one seems to have the makings of that, about how sort of drug cartels who fancy this exotic small whale that's threatened, and that interaction and efforts to save that species looks interesting.
Yeah. Is anybody surprised? I guess I was a little surprised that by now I was expecting a lot more films that were focused directly on on Trump, but we rather we have films that are kind of he's sort of in the periphery or the background or something like Knock the House Down. Of course, we have Democrats running, you know, in the age of Trump, or Roy Cohn, which that Trump was his last prominent client. So he's kind of to the side, but not directly, you know, the focus of a lot of pictures.
Yeah, I actually think there's a lot of more rather than straight on about, oh man, it's okay. So what are solutions? And a lot of this, it's looking at all sides. And I don't even know how to explain this exactly, but it's just more like being. I'm lost right now. Yes. I'll get back to you guys on this one.
Okay. Yeah.
That's how the whole country feels, right?
It's hard to love him or hate him. It's hard to deal with the orange glare, you know. It's interesting. I sometimes call. They have what I call accidental double features in the program. And premieres, for instance, have two movies about dark government conspiracies during the age of the war on terror. The two pitches on that theme, and my double feature that I call close to home, which is one is the film about Ted Bundy.
Mm-hmm.
And you were saying, Linda, it'll be interesting to see Zac Efron as Ted Bundy.
It will be, yeah. I think, he's an interesting actor. So I think visually he is a good casting choice. But
yeah,
we'll see.
And it'll be interesting for Utahns because Bundy, of course, had his... he passed through Utah during his infamous adventures. And... I mean, the one episode that tripped him up where he tried to abduct a girl and she got away occurred at the mall that I used to shop at all the time when I was growing up in the 70s, the Fashion Place Mall. So sort of get connected to the, and I remember the stories that he was always, always referred to as a former University of Utah law school student, Ted Bundy. Where'd you go to law school, Mark?
Oregon.
Yeah, I see.
I'm a duck.
Oregon. somebody would always say, why don't they call him former Republican campaign worker Ted Bundy?
Yeah.
And like you said, it'll be very interesting to see the documentary on Harvey Weinstein in probably the Eccles or something in some venue that just a few years ago he would have been there as a welcome and highly respected guest.
Right.
You might be sitting in the seat the row that he might have occupied.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see that one. For some of mine, Knock Down the House will be interesting just because I think it's a pretty safe bet that Ocasio-Cortez is going to turn up.
That'd be great.
Great.
She's super
awesome.
And she may be this year's rock star like RBG. She may be, I would bet a small amount of money that she is... She will be the star at the annual protest rally on Saturday morning.
I don't think we have one yet.
Nothing planned yet?
I don't think
so.
I haven't heard anything.
She'll
have to wrap a political statement to Eminem's performance at midnight, wherever that ends up being.
Well, we want to see some pink hats out there. Keep them out.
I imagine that, I love the rule, the Sundance rule, that if there's any documentary about a real person, it's like either the person is dead or they're sitting behind you, which will be the case of Roy Cohn, dead, but, David Crosby,
Leonard Cohen.
Hopes that he might show up, Leonard Cohen. Cold Case Hammarskjöld, which kind of interesting to look into some dim, dimly in my childhood, I remember the headlines about the UN Secretary General, negotiating peace in this civil war in Africa and the plane crashing, and so now they're promising that we'll get the real story. So that'll be, we'll see about that. And just, you know, again, accidental themes. I don't know why. I know they used to have this kind of sub program that were kind of green oriented themes, mm-hmm. and that doesn't seem to be in the program.
Yeah.
Although there's two or three pictures about kind of saving wildlife, saving the bees or saving the tiger.
Right, I was going to say, yeah. I just gave you two. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah, but it doesn't have its own section?
Honeyland. It's not in its own section. And saving the small whale. I forget where that's in the program, but they had one about that.
Small stories, big themes.
Yes.
They're going to surprise you with their impact.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. Just when you
half the honey, save the small whale.
Yeah.
Just when you think you have the program figured out and the format, they go shaking it up. And I guess that keeps things fresh.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we will be back in just a little bit, and we'll try to take a look at what are the prospects for the Oscars.
The year is coming to an end, but it's never too late to feel great. For the month of December, 3-month fitness passes are on sale at the Park City Mark.
While it may never be too late to feel great, you really don't want to hesitate. The first 2 weeks of December passes are 20% off, and the last 2 weeks offer savings at 15% off.
Enjoy all the Mark has to offer, and for the first time ever, add group fitness classes to your pass at the same discounted rate.
Visit parkcityrecreation.org or call 615-5401. PC Mark is a nonprofit organization and proud KPCW supporter.
Support for KPCW programming has been provided by the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance, a nonprofit organization dedicated to protecting Utah's remaining Red Rock Wilderness lands. SUWA and Utah's Red Rock Wilderness need your support now more than ever. To learn more about how you can become involved, please visit the SUWA website at suwa.org.
Flash, we're back. yes, the greatest of all the Queen songs, the ones they did for movies, but perhaps the greatest one. And you know this, I guess this Monica, this was brought up in Blades of Glory. Was that it?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes, and of course Ted, where Mark Wahlberg and his teddy bear were huge fans of the Flash Gordon version. But so that'll tie in with Golden Globes because, you know, Bohemian Rhapsody and Rami Malek as Freddie Mercury are among the nominations for the Globes, and they say the Globes are kind of predictors of the Oscars. So I don't know. Mark, how seriously do you take the Golden Globes?
Not very. I disagree. I think they're the first indicator of what's popular. I think the Globes, most people are aware, are awarded by a relatively small group of Hollywood foreign press, and so I think they're very important to the industry because as foreign gross sales are now sort of the life-saving buoy of sort of most of Hollywood filmmaking, and that's an oversimplification, but it's just so important that their stature has sort of come up. They used to be a little bit of the joke of award seasons, and now they're extremely important for the industry. But I think in terms of alliance with both popular vote and the critics, they're sort of always in the middle. So they're always good banter. It's a good source of banter because they always generate controversy because they're so, they do have some weird choices. And so, but I think those from the critics' side tend to kind of push them aside a little.
Yes, so of the stuff that has been nominated and, you know, that you've seen, what are some of your impressions of the pictures that are kind of getting thrown at for nominations?
Well, I think the biggest surprise was Vice in terms of getting so much because and it's a little hard for us to react because although the Oscar season is always late, this year it's really late. There is so much that's being nominated that it isn't even available or in theaters. It's hard to criticize stuff that's going to be nominated for a 2019, you know, Oscar or award season that isn't even in distribution yet. And here we are at December 8th. So a lot of those, it's a little hard to criticize. But I think that was certainly a big surprise to everyone that got so much attention. And I think some of the I don't know. I'm curious to hear what you guys think in terms of omissions. If there's something that didn't stand out or that stood out in terms of.
Yeah, that's interesting. I can't say I've seen a huge omission. Two of my recent favorites, Star is Born and Bohemian Rhapsody, you know, definitely hit a lot of different categories there. So I think they were all well deserved. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think on Golden Globes, maybe some more emissions are more on the TV side, in my opinion. But I don't know. What do you think, Jill?
Like what?
Well, yeah, no, I think it's definitely a good sign for A Star is Born, because I think that is sort of still the front runner, notwithstanding that it's, you know, a serial remake. Mm-hmm. And I think it still benefits, kind of like Crazy Horse did, that the casting was a risk-taking effort that paid off in terms of both Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga just nailed it, and so it's elevated beyond. I think it wouldn't have had the appeal that it would have had if they just didn't kill it. But
yeah,
it's hard to get, you know, you're behind something that's, and actually it's been made one more time. Most people don't know that Simpsons made a Star is Burns. A film festival where Barney won. With Pocahontas. just want to throw that in there.
Well,
yeah.
You know,
keep
and
it interesting.
Have we all seen A Star is Born here?
Yeah.
Yes. So comparing Lady Gaga to Bradley Cooper, who do you think was stronger?
Oh, you know, I thought Lady Gaga gave such a genuine, raw performance. Mm-hmm. You know, and you just, something that you didn't expect from her.
Yeah.
She's such a sensational, you know, singer and performer, and I think she's worth going to the film for. And Bradley Cooper, I think he did a great job directing. I thought he did a great job with the musical, you know,
because that was really him.
Yeah,
right?
But his portrayal of the character in love with this, you know, young upcoming singer, I did not buy it.
Really,
I kept looking, going, oh, it was kind of cringe. It was just kind of made me cringe a little bit. And I'm a fan of his. But I think I'll see the movie for Lady Gaga.
Yeah,
she was incredible.
It was amazing. I think he got stronger as the film went on, his character. I mean, Lady Gaga is just such a presence. And you know, interesting for her and Rami Malek, too. It's first time Oscar, right? Nomination? So I think, it's interesting to see some first timers up there.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. We're not going to talk about the comedians? I mean, come on. Andrew Dice Clay. Who would have thought? Risk takers? You thought I was talking about the leads?
Well, how about
Dave Chappelle?
Mike Myers?
Andrew Dice Clay?
Mike
Where did
Myers?
They come from?
Mike Myers in Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah.
That was a great cameo. Uh-huh. That was funny. Uh-huh. That was really worth going for.
Yeah, which I understand. He's got a... I understand his cameo is like a record executive who says, you know, people are not, you're never going to have people but bouncing their heads to Bohemian Rhapsody.
That was well crafted.
Well, speaking of comedies, I actually think I'm really glad to see Black Klansman by Spike Lee, you know, doing so well. And I thought it was just a tour de force. You know, he's so bold and outrageous and courageous. And starring Denzel Washington's son, John David Washington, just gave a great performance. And Adam Driver, he's up for a Golden Globe for Best Supporting Role. And I, you know, I thought, any thoughts about Black Panther?
That one is, I mean, it's not a terrible surprise, because I think from the time it came out early this year, they kind of said, yeah, this is a good this is the respectable Marvel movie. This is the one that we can love out in the open or something.
Yeah, it was the game changer for sure. It's just really cool to see this, you know, diversity, people of color, women, you know, really coming to the forefront finally. We're not totally there, but it's pretty exciting.
But I think the door is still open. I don't think the discussion is closed. And
absolutely,
as in past years, I don't think you have a clear favorite. I think Roma is going to come out super strong. And of course, under their rules, Roma was not eligible for Best Picture because of the foreign classification. And then you have, if Beale Street Could Talk, I think is still out there. Obviously, Green Book is generating a lot of support as well. Although I think Green Book, being the story about a black musician that tours down south with a driver who helps him through the difficulty, played by Viggo Mortensen.
And if anyone wanted to see Viggo Mortensen, if he got fat,
this is
your picture.
He is an eating machine. There is literally a hot dog eating contest in this film. And while the increase in diversity is exceptional, I think Green Book also demonstrates, though, that timing is almost more important sometimes on the impact with voters than the overall quality. I don't think Green Book is as strong of a film of even say Loving from a few years ago, which was very underseen in my opinion. Or even right. some like, and I think we were talking a little bit, Linda and I, about the writer James Baldwin is often critical of these kind of what he called moderating films, like you'd see Sidney Poitier in the '60s, and just shameful that we can't get that films like. What Happened, Miss Simone,
is
a much more legitimate film or biopic, much harder film to watch, get the mass attention that it deserves. And yet here comes a feel-good Green Book that I think Rick said you're almost guilty, enjoying.
It's
not dirty enough. Nobody gets shot.
It's the twist on...
do we really need another Driving Miss Daisy?
Yeah, driving Dr. Ali. And it is, Mark's right, it is in the, very much in the tradition of,
but it's true. But the difference is it's not just dramatic. It's true. There is a base. It is truthful. So it is based on something that happened. And it's so that does give it more of a legitimacy in terms of, hey, a lot of people need to see this story because they weren't aware of it. And it does help change perspective. And so
I wasn't even aware that such a thing as the Jim Crow tourist guide, the Green Book,
right?
It tells you what hotels and restaurants will accept blacks.
But at the end of the day, I'd rather see Saoirse Ronan, twirl spaghetti than watch Martinson eat another hot dog.
Should we give a nod to our Sundance, since we're in Sundance town, to Robert Redford and his Old Man and the Gun?
And I wish if this is the valedictory Oscar nomination, I was not that. It's amiable, but it just seems a little cotton candy-ish to me. It just doesn't seem there's too much there, except for Redford has some nice chemistry with Sissy Spacek, and Tom Waits tells this nice little Shaggy Dog story, and it's a movie with bits and pieces.
To
me, anyway.
It is this kind of innocent time of, kind of throwback to this innocent time of gentlemen thieves, you know, and so it just a nod to the Butch Cassidy and the Sting. And it was shot entirely on 16 millimeter film, and it's kind of just this reflective, you know, film. But the soundtrack, isn't that up for a Golden Globe? And it's just one of those films that's kind of quiet, and it's kind of being it's lost in all the bigness of all the other films. But I think it has some staying power.
Well, and to throw in there, it's playing at the film series this weekend.
Well, that's right. It's playing this weekend.
Yeah.
Yes.
It is the perfect sort of film for if you have to watch a film for your parents that, you know, your parents don't want, like that Sundance film mm-hmm. or the, you know, something that you might force upon them from their perspective. And it's a good one to it is a throwback where we've had a lot of film noir throwback. This is that that sort of good bad guy
yes.
kind of.
And I predict Green Book will be a good candidate for the film series, too.
Oh, yeah.
Or Park City Film.
Mm-hmm.
But
how about Crazy Rich Asians? What do you all think about their noms?
Considering
two.
The popularity of the film, it's not a surprise that it made it into the musical / comedy category.
It reminds me of La La Land a little bit, just the color and the mm-hmm. fun, and you know, it was not what I was expecting when I went to go see it. And no, I think it's a nice escape. It's fun.
I think you know, I just saw it recently, and I really felt that it was very shiny and beautiful on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
But it also went deeper for me. It has all these metaphors like the lotus flower, mm-hmm. which is something that's eternally going, you know, unfolding. And I saw that as the characters, the mother and her daughter-in-law, that relationship was really poignant for me.
Mm-hmm.
And it played against expectations. At one time you see an Asian woman, beautiful, but also thoughtful and giving, and I'm a little bit lost of words on this one, but I feel that there was a lot more to that film than just the shiny mm-hmm. outside.
Mm-hmm.
So I really appreciate it. I'm glad it's getting some, you know, good attention. Hope it wins some awards.
Yeah, and I think that was Awkwafina's kind of entree into cinema as well. So she's great in the film.
Yeah, so, you know, Mark, like you said, there's a lot of pictures that are not out yet. So, you know, anything high on your list to, you know, some of these nominees or other Oscar prospects that you're waiting to see in the next month?
Well, I mentioned the two, Roma, I don't think Beale Street Could Talk has had a wide distribution mm-hmm. yet either. And I think the problem is some of these films are more on the quieter side. So I think the question is, can they get enough momentum mm-hmm. to get seen through? Because they're going to need word of mouth. They're not going to be big industry splashes. And will they get enough attention in the short time frame they have to garner the support to make a serious Oscar run? I think Roma will, but mm-hmm. we'll see. And Vox Lux with Natalie Portman. I think Natalie Portman is a shoo-in as a nomination in that film. Whether the total that kind of outlier film, you know, could be this year's crash if no one else gains, you know, the solidarity in the voting, because it's going to be such a different artistic hit. And sometimes all of a sudden you can see Oscar swing towards a film like that.
Yeah, yeah. One of the other smaller ones, Can You Ever Forgive Me? Melissa McCarthy. She plays, you know, more serious role. That's also playing at Park City Film next weekend. And I think that's one of those that you see the trailer and go, oh, you know, maybe. But you know, I'm glad to see that she got a nomination for a Golden Globe for best supporting or for best role mm-hmm. actress. So you know, I'm excited to see that one.
Okay, we'll be back with our jingle bells on, and we'll try to talk a little bit about Christmas movies.
Only Dr. Hans Sarkov, formerly at NASA, has provided any explanation.
Hi, I'm Dr. Woodward with the Park City LiveWell Center, and we're proud supporters of KPCW. If you're looking for help transitioning to a healthier lifestyle, check out the LiveWell Center services available at Intermountain Park City Hospital. With more than a dozen services like exercise classes, sports training, nutrition counseling, and more, it's our mission to help you live the healthiest life possible. Visit parkcityhospital.org to learn more. Intermountain Park City Hospital, healing for life.
Intermountain Healthcare is a nonprofit organization. Wake up to the Marketplace Morning Report every weekday at 6:50 and 7:50 during the morning news with Leslie Thatcher. Brought to you in part by Big D Construction, DeJuria Center at High Star Ranch, and Esco Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electrical. That's Esco, E-S-C-O.
Next year all our troubles will be out of sight.
Yes, and we're back, and I'm going to ask the panel to kind of think about Yuletide for a second here. That is from Meet Me in St. Louis, which is that, you know, that subgenre of Christmas movie where there's a great Christmas song in it, but it's not entirely about Christmas. It's also, you know, MAME with We Need a Little Christmas. You know, that was just, you know, a number in the middle of the picture. But we're inviting our panel to play a game that we tried out last time called Famous Stories Told from the Point of View of a side character, Christmas edition. We even made it even tougher. This is tougher than 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon. I'll tell you the Christmas edition. But I'll try to just a sample. The idea is to describe a story that everybody knows, but to from the perspective of a supporting character or a bit character. And the example I gave to our panel was a London urchin reports to local police that he's been molested by a dirty old man who offers him half a crown for a large Christmas goose.
So, Christmas do we guess the movie?
Yeah.
A Christmas Carol?
Yes, Christmas Carol.
Yes, okay. and if we run into one that somebody has one that stumps the entire panel, maybe we can invite callers to call in and tell us if they've got the answer. But I could tell Jill looks anxious.
I look anxious?
Yeah.
Granddaughter of the 4-star general from Pine Tree, Vermont. Instead of joining the cast of singers and running away with them to New York City to fulfill her lifelong dreams, she stays home and becomes the town's first woman snowmaker.
Was that song banned on radio? No, that's a different song. A White Christmas.
Holiday Inn, right? This is a film.
White Christmas.
White Christmas. Oh,
White Christmas.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Okay.
Yes. Yeah, she's there. She runs the ski resort, instead of a glamorous life of showbiz, she devotes her life to running the ski resort. Then one year, somebody forgets to renew the lease, and she loses the resort.
The Park City
to
version.
To a multinational corporation.
I see.
Okay, Linda.
You know what? I actually kind of misunderstood the assignment a little bit, but I was trying to think of what would have been an interesting perspective of a secondary character telling the story, and I was thinking of Randy from A Christmas Story. I mean, poor Randy. Stuck in his snowsuit, not much dialogue.
Eating those mashed potatoes.
something like that.
Yeah.
I think the mom loves him the most, though.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Younger brother abused Ralphie during wintertime by being forced to don large layers of winter clothing. Yeah.
Nobody cares what I want for Christmas.
Yeah, yes. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Really? Nobody ever.
What did he want, anyways?
Yeah. He didn't want. I don't know. Yeah. Poor Randy.
Mark, what is?
All right, here we go. My boss, who at first wouldn't stand up to an American prick and fires me over his own inability to reconcile professional and personal Me Too feelings, tells Yanks to finally F off and wins my heart while drunk sings pop remake and background of collage of soap opera love stories we can't turn away from.
Love Actually.
All right. Very good. A high-class one, you know,
yes.
from a Brit movie. Okay. Well, this one, okay, my own, a heroic EMT working in Indiana in the 1940s tries to cope with a public health crisis as he responds to frosty elementary playgrounds where youngsters are suffering ton-related injuries.
Christmas Story.
Yes. Okay.
Two for the Christmas Story.
Wow, yeah.
I'll
triple dog dare
triple
you.
Dog yeah. dare.
Triple dog dare.
Did you all try to ever do that?
Only if our microphones were frosty metal right now.
Yeah, there were. I wonder how many kids actually had to be, you know, saved after that movie first came out.
My kids tried that.
How did
it was. They didn't get sick.
They were okay. They didn't.
They're
get
okay.
Stuck.
They survived. Just begs for try this at home.
It does.
Okay.
It
well, does. The Monica over on the board. Do you have any? Monica had the best one the last time we played this, but not at the moment. Not at the moment.
Holiday movie viewing.
Yeah.
It's pretty limited to the Hallmark Channel. So.
Okay.
I can talk about the
main
character, and you guys wouldn't.
Yeah, we could. Yeah, you could describe the plot of every Hallmark Christmas movie. You know, driven woman professional is forced to return to her hometown and
to save the cookie factory slash toy factory.
Cookie factory. Yes. Yeah.
For Christmas festival.
And
has anybody seen the new Grinch?
Haven't.
No.
Not yet.
Mm-mm. No, I was probably, I must have been spoiled. Well, I still love the old Chuck Jones and Boris Karloff version.
Oh, and, yeah. Can't beat that.
And they kind of mishandled the Jim Carrey version so much that maybe it turned me off the Grinch for a while. It was like, you know, where the Who's are a consumer mad society, and they're so loathsome they deserve to have Christmas stolen from them. But I've heard good stuff about the new Grinch. I mean, Benedict Cumberbatch doing it and all that stuff.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's try one more little Christmas round if we could. And this suggestion from Linda was to give us our three favorite Christmas pictures, and I'll throw this in to if we have one movie that's mentioned multiple times, we'll start to keep score, and you know, we'll see what movie is the champion. The number one picture will win precisely nothing. They will win 1,000 points of Phantom Ednog. That's it. Nothing. That's it. But so, Linda, your top three Christmas, the ones that you may not watch every year, but you try to.
Well, you know, you say that about watching every year. I rarely watch films twice. But with Christmas or holiday films, I do. And it's just part of the tradition. So I start out after Thanksgiving with my favorite, Love Actually. Love it. I wanted, actually, Bruvies showed it this year. I wanted to go down and watch it down there, but I didn't make it. I thought it'd be fun to see it in the theater there. But I just love that film. It's awesome. A Christmas Story is the tradition on Christmas Day, just hanging around the house. I mean, you can't miss it. It's broadcast
24/7.
TBS. Yeah. On Christmas Day.
Yeah. Like, so that's fun.
On a loop.
Classic White Christmas, of course, is also just nostalgic and great. And I have a fourth, and it's because it was filmed in one of my favorite places, Rockport, Massachusetts. I'll Be Home for Christmas. It's 1988, I believe, with Hal Holbrook, Eva Marie Saint, and an up and coming Courtney Cox. But it's just, again, set in my favorite place in the world. And
is that a TV movie or not?
You know,
a Hallmark?
I think it probably made its way to TV, but it's really 1988. Sorry. Oh. Yeah. So it's look it up if you're looking for something neat and just want to see an idyllic New England town.
Okay, no,
in the holidays.
There isn't a character in there who's a driven professional woman who has to come back and save the cookie factory.
No.
Okay. Let's see, Jill.
Oh, I am just a huge Jimmy Stewart fan, so I love It's a Wonderful Life. Mm-hmm. We have that playing all the time in our home. A Christmas Carol, the Charles Dickens famous one, but there's so many versions of that. And actually, this year it's 175 years old.
Oh, my gosh.
That story.
Yeah. Do you have any particular favorite
I'm
version?
I'm very particular about this. The 1999 remake with Patrick Stewart.
Uh-huh.
Just love him. You know, Star Trek, Jean-Luc, Captain.
Make it so Cratchit.
And and for me, for the musical, Christmas is White Christmas all the way. We play that all the time. And I just love that song, Snow, Snow,
I like Snow. Sisters.
Oh, yes. Yeah, sisters. La 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 la. And George Clooney's mother, Rosemary Clooney, of course. And, you know, the film is about a small resort town anxiously awaiting for their snow.
Sounds so nice.
Yeah, it's yeah,
we got
definitely.
It.
We can relate to that.
Yeah. And a very, I love, it's kind of an fit 1950s Eisenhower era plot. It's a, how can we help the poor military general who went into the ski resort business and can't make a go of it? And you know he's not, you know, at this point he's still remembering to renew the lease, so they have to do something else. Okay. Well, let's see. So far in the lead we have White Christmas, which is mentioned twice. So Mark.
Well, I'm going to throw a wrench in the voting because I went opposite. As I said, if you're going to talk about good Christmas movies, I had to talk about good, bad Christmas movies.
Oh,
so
good.
I had to start with
Bad Santa,
of course, because Billy Bob's just got so many scenes in that are just seared in my head. And so
Billy Bob's in two, Love Actually as well,
right,
both bad characters.
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
He's the prick. President, which, you know. Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, Robert Downey Jr., Val Kilmer, kind of film noir tribute. Most people forget, kind of centered around Christmas holidays. And then I think third, I'll give a vote to It's a Wonderful Life on the side, just because the more for the theme of just not knowing what you've accomplished and how hard it is to remember what you have. And I think that's such an important message. And it gets, some people just push off It's a Wonderful Life because it's slow, Capra-esque. They can't watch it again, but it's just such an important lesson to always remember is
truly
take stock
gratitude
of what you have and be, you know.
Yeah, and one of the most remarkable things about that for a Christmas movie, I don't think I have to yell spoiler alert too much. It's a wonderful feel-good movie. You feel great about it in spite of the fact that the villain suffers no retribution whatsoever. Technically, it's an unhappy ending because he doesn't even feel a guilty conscience for 30 minutes. But you know, SNL illustrated once why it has to have that ending, because they in the old Dana Carvey SNL days they created a new ending where George Bailey and the townsfolk realize how old Mr. Potter screwed them, and they form a lynch mob and they go after him.
But the one nod I'll give for a recent film, and it goes on the Christmas Carol theme, is if you haven't seen A Man Who Invented Christmas, that is the most recent take on this featuring Christopher Plummer, and more kind of where the Winnie the Pooh kind of films failed to really deliver great films on how, you know, where they try to capture how the author wrote those. This one is that story. It tells the perspective of the writing, and I think it does a fantastic job, particularly if you like the stage elements from the actual play. I think you'll really enjoy A Man Who Invented Christmas, and that's from 2017.
Okay, and I'll throw in my vote. I think I'm throwing in the deciding vote here, because on my list is also It's a Wonderful Life. So I think that's three votes for Frank Capra and Jimmy Stewart. My second, I'm not quite sure how to tally this one, because it is a Christmas carol, but it is it's not Jill's version. My favorite is the version from the Brits made about 1951 with an actor named Alastair Sim,
mm-hmm.
who was more remembered in British cinema than in ours, but. You know, the Alastair Sim version is classic.
It is.
It has a Marley's Ghost, who is just an incredible ham, played by a wonderful actor named Michael Hordern, and the most famous person in the whole cast is a young Patrick McNee playing young Marley, and about the only recognizable face. And my third is an outlier. Called We're No Angels from the 50s with Humphrey Bogart, Peter Ustinov, and Aldo Reyes, three escapees from Devil's Island who plot to rob and pillage this family, but the family is so hapless they end up helping them out and making their Christmas bright and foiling their cruel landlord Basil Rathbone, the Humphrey Bogart Basil Rathbone Christmas movie. Don't see that very often.
Yeah, exactly. I love how you can dig these up, Rick.
No,
that's amazing.
Great bit.
We should mention that Miracle on 34th Street is going to be playing on the big screen at Park City Film on December 20th at 7 p.m.
That's
we should
nice.
Give a plug for that.
That'll be a great community.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, and speaking of trivia, watching Miracle on 34th Street. Look for when you can spot a young Jack Albertson in a small but decisive part, but we're wrapping it up for the December version of the Fabulous Film Panel, and I want to thank our magical elves who turned out for this, Jill Orshall, Mark Harrington, and Linda Jager, and. Hope to see some of you back after Sundance, and we'll talk about how Sundance went.
Thanks, Rick. It was
fun. Happy holidays.
Yeah.